Look, to make this work, 10 million is a base number. It sounds ambitious, but if you think about, we talk to 10 people, 10 people talk to 100 people, 100 people talk to 1,000, and so on, it quickly becomes a viable number, because the more people understand what we've done and how this is working and that the opportunity is there to get on board with it quickly and easily, the better this can all play through. And ultimately, yeah, we've created Gaju Market as a place you can buy and sell any good or service, legal good or service. It's not intermediated, it is moderated. So if you want to sell an hour of your gardening time in the local area, put it up on Gaju Market. Earn Gajus that way. So all of the things to facilitate this we're trying to put in place, but ultimately, 10 million people is the number that begins to turn the dial to say, actually, this is a global economy in emergence. You get to 100 million people and you become a G20 economy. And now for the first time in thousands of years, people can actually have an alternative to a controlled economy. They can open a human economy by the people, for the people, and transact in that.
Let's go! Christopher, welcome back. Let's talk about Gaju Maru. So I looked this up and I saw that it's a tree. It's a tree that gives life, supposedly. So is that the impetus behind calling this Gaju Maru?
Partially. So here's one right now. You have to take a quick look at it. I've got one sitting right on my desk.
Okay, how about that?
So the reason that we decided to use it for that. So QPQ Switzerland is the company that has launched basically what is Bitcoin 3.0. Right, so there are two previous versions of Bitcoin. The one everyone hears about, that they call Bitcoin, is BTC, which is an excellent proof of concept, but it failed to deliver what Satoshi Nakamoto intended in the white paper, which was a trustless peer-to-peer cash system, meaning you don't need Visa to guarantee the payment. You don't need a bank to guarantee the payment. You and I, based on the technology, can transmit value over the internet. The idea was,
it should be,
yeah, a radical economic inclusiveness. And the reason it's called the Gaju Maru is because they had to find a name for it. One of our developers lives in Japan. It's also it's called a banyan tree in other places. But what it does is rather than creating rings as it grows, it creates new bulls that grow out. So the sort of big arching things you see in tropical jungles in Asia, that's what it does. So the idea was it replicates itself that way, which is similar to how a true blockchain should work. So
aptly named.
That's why it's called that. Yep.
Very incredible. So I know that everybody is very familiar with the term Bitcoin and knows what Bitcoin is. You can go buy it at Coinstar at the grocery store, right? If you've got the cash. So, oh, there's a Greg in the lobby here. Let's see if we should let him in.
Great. If you can join, that'd be even better. Hey, there he is.
Hey, I pushed the 5:30 call to 6:30 my time, so can join you.
Thank you. Well, Greg, it's nice to meet you for the first time. Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself for everybody, and then we'll just dive into what's going on here.
Okay, so founder of QPQ, we're the people who built the Gaju Maru. I've been doing this for 24 years now. Started 2001 thinking that financial markets were mad because you had to have different computers to access different markets. This would be into Christopher's realm of when fintech was still in its infancy. And that's really been the journey. You know, I initially started looking at how real world assets could be brought completely on chain, because the point of a blockchain is to allow us to trust the message, not the messenger, securely at scale. If you have to go back to third-party custody, you're still stuck in this realm. And this is the issue you see now with the so-called RWA tokens. They're still tokens that point at an asset. So the starting point for us was to think, okay, how do we fix that? How do we get complete assets on chain? We did that to the satisfaction of a global regulator. Unfortunately, things got derailed. But the more fundamental problem we had was that nobody had built an actual blockchain that actually worked. Everything we looked at the time was... ultimately what we tried to do was what we called one DLT, and it was a great innovation for then, and probably still would be if it wasn't for the fact that the game has moved on, things have changed. But ultimately what we did is we tried to stitch different pieces of different distributed ledgers together to create effectively a sow's ear, for instead of a silk purse. But that's I think the real beauty of where we are now is we have an actual blockchain that actually works, minting real money that really works. And now every door that we've ever thought about, all the different businesses we thought we could build, they all become possible, which is phenomenal. I mean, this is the journey. It's been the economic emancipation of humanity. So that's the 3-minute pitch.
I would just add something real quick. Brandon, because when I got to know the team and got to know what QPQ was building, my first reaction to the true phrase of we've the first to build an actual blockchain that actually works was a bit like, well, hold on a minute. Like lots of corporations are building things. They have blockchain divisions. They spend a lot of money, right? And the point that Greg is making is that there are bits and pieces of what would constitute a complete blockchain built by others. And that's a great first step. Right. And part of where the QPQ journey is very helpful for folks who've done that is you may have adopted a chunk of a piece of a blockchain solution and you've seen how it works, but you've also seen its limitations. And so that's actually a great place for us to be coming into a market where it's not that no one's heard blockchain. Plenty of people have heard it. Absolutely. Not that no one's heard Bitcoin. But now we actually built the full thing that is being received in the market very well, because they have learned about the inadequacies of the partial solutions they built.
Got you. So when we talked about this before, you advertised it as the best version of blockchain. You sort of best version of Bitcoin, Bitcoin 3.0. And you've sort of run down why that is. But what is its true potential here as far as if somebody is going to look into this and understand how they could apply it into their day-to-day life? Obviously, these transactions, like you said, between you and me, trust the message, not the messenger. But to the everyday person who's going to use this.
Securely at scale,
right.
We're very into our qualifying words. So when we say blockchain that actually works, we mean for people to actually get actually in each right. bit. And same with securely at scale. It's really important because ultimately you can do a distributed ledger with notepads and pencils and have someone go around checking that everybody's noted the same thing.
Not very efficient. But when we come to saying it's the economic emancipation of humanity, grandiose, yeah, but spot on. Because what you go back and read Satoshi's original paper about a trustless peer-to-peer cash system, electronic cash system, the idea is that everybody should be allowed to participate in the economy, right? So for those folks out there, I like to put it this way, who aren't very technical. If someone said to you, I'm going to create an HTTPS business, you get very strange looks, right? Well, that's just the transfer protocol for data across the internet. And for those of us old enough to remember the early days of the internet, if you put something wrong into the URL header, you would get error 404, right? Location not found, right? There's also, if you really bang on the internet hard enough, you can force yourself to get error 405, which was the placeholder for what was going to be an economic transfer layer to the internet. But a bunch of accidents like Amazon deciding, well, why should I go through all that trouble? We'll just let Visa take care of that. So we'll get people to use their credit cards. Problem solved. Well, not really, because Visa and MasterCard charge 2.5%. They've got a $5 minimum. So if you've got a business sitting in Pakistan or Bangladesh or Ohio, where you're willing to charge someone 9 cents for a service, under that Visa model, the third-party model, you literally cannot do it. They will not process that 9 cents. So what we've built, which is the actual Bitcoin protocol built out, where, what is it, like 10,000 transactions under a penny at scale, Greg, whatever it is. The idea is anyone now can offer a service at any price and actually get it done.
That's amazing.
Just to explain this, it tips into things that, when people talk about Web 3 versus Web 2, Web 2 is what Christopher pointed out. It's that data fabric. And what we've done is create an economic fabric. But it becomes relevant with things like we dislike the phrase Web3 because it's been grossly and greatly abused. But if you were to do something that made some sense, you might think of it thusly, that Web2 is a world in which you access things, you have services that you think are free because you're the product. And these are the honeypots that you tip into in order to get what you want, whether that's a Google Maps direction or an email service or a search. But what if you could pay for a search? You know, pay 100th or 1,000th of a cent to ask a simple question like, where is the nearest hamburger joint to where I'm standing right now? And actually, quite a few of those hamburger joints are paying to be in the search results. But let's just say we move into a world where we actually own our data. Well, if you own your data, you're now going to have to pay for the services that you hitherto think are free. Mm-hmm. But this is a good thing because it means you still own your data, but you're paying 1,000th of a cent to ask the question, where's the nearest burger joint to where I'm standing right now? And, you know, one of the things that we're going to be pushing into the whole chain over the next 18 months is the ability to do data analytics like that with privacy at scale. So actually you're using zero knowledge proofs to do this. So you really are retaining your data. The search engine, the maps service, whatever it is you want to use, doesn't need to know anything more about you than the immediate data points that are required to answer your question. Mm-hmm. These are really significant step changes, and maybe more so for our generation and on, that we're more aware of the invasion of privacy. I don't know, but we have certainly traded our privacy for convenience. And what this offers is the ability to restore our data, but retain that convenience because such tiny payments being facilitated within the system are possible.
So let me ask you this. You're developing something that's incredibly secure for people to protect their data. Like you said, this is a risk that everybody incurs when they go online. You give out your email address, anything like this. And recently I've been reading about how, you know, this description on blockchain or the future of blockchain is sort of in danger with the future of quantum computing and the way quantum computing is able to hack blockchain. Is there anything that you can get into on that and how this will remain secure into the future as the way we compute things gets more advanced?
A lot of the a lot of what goes on around quantum computing is really, it's clickbait. There's an awful lot of it that is quite some way off being a threat where it is a threat and it's more immediate. I mean, for example, within the Gajimaru, we have the hooks to put quantum secure systems in place. It's not something that we're doing out of the gate because actually it's really clunky and it's still going to be clunky for a while. To some extent, with anything in life, it's probabilistic. So what are the chances of you being hacked by a quantum computer? Well, they're infinitesimally small, right? What are the chances of you being targeted? Because you have to, quantum computing is not like a web search where you can say, hey, find whoever's got a 10-word password and hack them, please. It's not like that. So the threat is more nuanced than it's made out to be, but we have got provisions in place to deal with it. I think when we talk about security, you actually hit upon the really interesting point is what do you hack? And this is where we've made the real step change. So at the very cornerstone of the idea that there's a separation between the Internet of Economics and the Internet of Data sits this simple point. The Internet of Data is about how you make a buying decision. It's where you do your research. It's where you look at the different websites. The Internet of Economics is where you actually transact. And we've made them very distinct things. So we built our wallet from scratch because every other wallet comes pre-hacked by the People's Liberation Army, the NSA, and GCHQ. And it's simple how they do that because they inject code into the libraries that are drawn upon for all the other wallets you see out there. Yep. So our team are a little bit freakish about this kind of thing, but that's freakish in a good way from a user perspective. Mm-hmm. So actually what we did to get rid of that, the biggest vector for attack is that web page that you're logging into with your login and password. We bend that. We do the whole thing off air-gapped optical systems, which run out of the secure enclave in your mobile phone, your laptop. And one day, we hope very soon, we'll actually be producing hardware systems that have a screen on one side, a camera on the other, and you can actually do all of the transactional throughputs optically. So with an optical confirmation as grids, and we this is on our demo on YouTube. It's the quid pro quo demo. We now call it Gaju Market, but that's what it was originally. And you can actually see us doing this transaction and confirming points along the way. And at no point does the person log in or create an account or have a password that can be hacked. None of the classical vectors exist. So in reality, to actually hack this, you have to literally be in between me and you in the optical plane.
The real man in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, most of the attack vectors are at those crossing points where you have to change between standard. It's kind of like the rail gauges in Europe were changed so that if you were trying to invade, you had to stop and switch over to another rail system, by which time you're already being defeated. That's one of the main things, is that we're not crossing between chains. We've got a full, final, complete chain that just works.
Zut alors, we will stop these Germans at the border by making them change the train track, eh?
Exactly.
Don't imagine bother about... No, you don't need those guns. We just change the train track.
That's awesome.
And it's functional. So
yeah, it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
So I have one more question for you, and then let's talk about where people can learn more about this and where they can find this and get on board. But President Trump's talked about the United States developing its first international sovereign fund, and one of the focal points on that is cryptocurrency. How does Gajimoro come into play with that? Is that something you guys are looking at into? If this is the most secure format of blockchain, it sounds like this is something that should be incorporated into this international sovereign fund eventually, right?
I'll grab that one first. And we'll see. There's on the plus side, we are delighted by the sort of laissez-faire but rational sort of regulatory ideas put forward by this administration, in sharp distinction from the previous administration, which unsurprisingly kind of showed a hostility to all things free market to begin with. So the sort of negative paranoia about crypto evinced by the SEC under Gary Gensler, I'm not saying it had no basis in reality, but they really focused on the scammers and the liars who tried to do pump and dump schemes and the rest of it. And by doing that, they tried to put in place highly restrictive preventive regulations in the usual sort of Washington DC one size fits all, which means that it never fits anything. Idea. Whereas this administration coming in has been a little bit more clear about rational adults should be able to make rational economic decisions for themselves. And so that's already being shown by a few different laws that are signed into place. When it comes down to, and this is again my opinion entirely, the reason sovereign wealth funds exist in other nations is they lack the deep voluntary capital markets the United States takes for granted. The U.S. does not need a sovereign wealth fund. All it's going to be is another plaything of politicians who I guarantee are instantly going to start lobbying for, no, that factory should be built in Ohio, not Texas, right? It is a terrible idea. And when it comes to what they've decided to do with Bitcoin that has already been seized, sadly, it's the thin edge of the wedge because politicians and bureaucrats can't keep their paws off of something they find attractive. So when we finally seize the stuff, and then what are they going to sell it? Are we going to hold it? Who are we going to listen to? The government should just stay out of the markets, in my opinion. I don't know if Craig has a different view, but from an American standpoint, just leave us alone. Let the market build what they want to build, and that would be all I would want them to do.
So I'd add a few things into this. Number one, let's start with the Trump administration. For the team and I, it was very much a case of... we had a real trepidation. In Europe, the light of liberty has been switched off, apart from in Switzerland. Everywhere else, it's gone. You can get arrested and jailed for 3 years for saying hurty words to Keir Starmer, or to Tier Keir Starlin, as I prefer to call him, in the
Keir
UK.
Keir Starlin, I like that.
Yep.
If only he was half as smart as Starlin, it would be an advantage. But hey, so forgive
Touché.
Me. Trump's election was nothing short of a rekindling of light on the horizon, literally on the Western horizon, that hope remained. That hope remained for a libertarian agenda. The whole history of America is that basically the Americans were the Brits who really liked liberty and didn't like being ruled by a king an ocean away. And more to the point, who really embraced the ideas of capitalism and liberty that were being enunciated, being published around that time and in the century immediately prior. So the entire American story is one of libertarian capitalism. I think we've seen a lot of divergence for that toward a more corporatist message. And corporatism is I win, you lose. Capitalism is I win, you win, we win. I would be absolutely on the same page as Christopher that the minute you start hearing about sovereign wealth funds, you're hearing about a failed economic system, because that means that classical systems are not working and that somehow the state has got to step in. An exception to that might be Norway. But even in that context, actually, the sovereign wealth fund arguably has destroyed Norwegians investing in Norwegian businesses.
Oh, awful.
So I don't think the US needs this. And I personally am very wary of the direction this has been taking, because I look at the crypto summit, for example, and every single one of them, fake blockchains, fake broker dealers, fake exchanges, that should alarm people. I mean, the when Christopher or I use the term exchange, it has real meaning, because to us, that's a multilateral trading facility that has other custodial operators within it, has a whole slew of regulatory permissions around it, so that where you are asked to trust, you trust with transparency in theory and with auditing. Look at the stablecoins. Tether has never even had an attestation. Circle, at best, has had an attestation, which is like a pinky promise that, yeah, we swear they've got the money. Okay, but what money? Because not all money is the same. A US 10-year T-bill is very different from a US dollar-denominated Chinese junk bond. Not the same thing. And you know, we learned all this, if anybody hadn't got that memo, in the 2008 global financial crisis, which led to the creation of Bitcoin, or more to the point, led to aspects of the Bitcoin story finding a zeitgeist. In terms of what I think, look, our aim is to get at least 10 million people mining this before we exit whitelist mining. Yep. What is whitelist mining? Whitelist mining is where, when you're building a proof of work blockchain, a real one, not a fake one, not one that some VC in California has pretended started minting today after 3 years of development. That's all lies. There is a corner case in there somewhere. They're just hiding it from you. There's no corner case in our system. No VC will ever like what we have to say, because there is no corner case whatsoever. There's no governance. There's no ownership. The one thing we have is we're saying, look, there's a lot of things that we want to build into this chain. They're all going to be free for everybody to use. It's all GPL3 licensing, which basically means it's open source. You can use the code. If you want to edit it, you have to reflect it back to the Gajimaru, but that's how it's going to work. Yeah. We have no foundation for sneaky governance. We have no foundation for sneaky systems to make things look faster than they are. And there's a few so-called blockchains that you could point that finger at. So if you really want to see how we can transform this, it's that. We need 10 million people on here doing this. And every single person who comes in, we're saying to them, hey, please help us to build this network out, because we're going to take, and I'm on record saying this again and again, and this is a factual statement, Christopher knows, I passed this with the board, 60% of our revenue is going to go to getting people on board, getting them loaded up on the software, putting the services in place to help them, education, marketing, promotion, so that people can talk to everyone else around them. They can access the resources to get this information right. We start doing better quality videos. All our videos right now are long form, rambling discussions, sometimes involving Christopher, but usually involving
rambling.
One of my team.
I'd like to make it, just break in for a second, because part of what we're doing, which is distinct. When I say the first two versions of Bitcoin were great proofs of concept, but failed to achieve the goal of the white paper. So BTC, once the number go up, all of a sudden that became the goal, right? I now own this, and if I was lucky enough or smart enough to get it at a penny, and now it's worth $100. I mean, that return alone was insane. And then all of a sudden, it's 83,000, or it's 4,000, or it's 900. Like, it's just, it is ridiculous. But whatever the number is, and I don't care, it failed to perform that function of radical economic inclusiveness. Recognizing that, about 8 years ago, BSV was born, Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, which is, again, same protocol, with the same white paper, and they actually made some better progress in terms of implementing smart contracts, having tradability. They really moved that along, but they also kind of faltered because they kept a governance standard and the rest, meaning someone can't control it. And what's incredibly important for the listeners to understand is we go into a lot of discussion about monetary theory. We're not going to. The point that gold was money for so long was, as J.P. Morgan talked about in his 1913 testimony to Congress, was gold is fixed. There's a fixed amount of gold spread throughout the earth, whether by God or the universe, don't care. There's a fixed amount of physical gold. The work that humans put in to locate it, qualify it, drill it, take it out, refine it, and turn it into gold, that work is what gives gold its inherent value, its inherent monetary value. You can't change that amount of gold in the planet. Similarly, the Gaju is just being minted straight out. 87 and a half years, the last one will be minted. They're divisible in many ways, but it meets that definition of money. Because if you're talking to anybody in crypto who does an airdrop, meaning they give it away, no one gives away money, right? They give away product that they hope you will then use to sell, to turn into money for themselves. Mm-hmm. So we've created actual money, but on a blockchain that actually has all the things you need in it. You can define assets on it. You can have smart contracts. You can trade with people you do not know across the world without a third-party intermediary guaranteeing anything. That is the incredibly crucial thing. And to do that, the big thing we're doing that no one else has bothered to do, or they haven't done effectively at all, is to create that ecosystem composing of miners, who are the ones who validate transactions, users, company who builds stuff that uses the blockchain, and then there will be a trading market. There'll be an FX market, if you will. It'll be market making. And that's the main difference that we're focused on getting done. And everyone else is focused on, my coin is great, it goes up. Meaning, I can't wait to sell it all to a bunch of pigeons and walk away and buy a house in Puerto Rico. We're not doing that. We're building a real functioning monetary economic system.
No, I love that, because this country, America, I mean, it's the country I know the most about, but decentralization and the way people do business, there's no reason why the government should come between you and I if I want to sell you something, or if I am going to perform a business or a service for you and you're going to pay me for that service. You and I are the only two people that need to be involved in that. And the right. more regulation there is, the more opportunity there is for you to lose money, for corruption, all these other things that go on with that. And I think that private business is one of the best inoculations to tyrannical government that we can have, because when you are doing it on your own, there's no need for the government to step in and do that for you. And I think people have lost sight of that. The government is not a parent, right? You have the ability to do these things on your own. So any sort of decentralized way that you and I can transact, two people, adults, like you said, conducting business, is the best thing that humans can have, not just Americans. So I love hearing you talk about it this way, because this is exactly the way this should be in the first place. And, you know, in the modern realm, data security, data sovereignty, all of these things, they are incredibly important, will become even more important as, you know, the time goes on. So Christopher and Greg, where can people get access to this? Well, what do we need to do? Go ahead, Greg.
Can I just pull you back for a second? Because everything you said is spot on. I just want to add something to it, and it's this. You can have all the free speech, all the guns in the world, but if you don't own your data, you don't own your assets, and you don't own your money, you are still a slave. You may be 3 days away from slavery versus the guys who don't have guns, but you are still on that road. And
well said.
At its core, that's what this is trying to be. It's trying to be a tool set that says, Groot, the base, we have no resource layer in the world right now. We haven't had an open resource layer since we stopped being hunter-gatherers. The moment we started to cultivate land, we needed somebody to protect us because somebody else would try and steal our work from us. And this led to what we have now, this highly paternalistic system of government, as you point out, and the idea that people are too stupid, too incapable, and too everything that they proved they weren't all the way through the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th century, we now assume that they are incapable. They weren't. They haven't been. They never were. So the at the cornerstone of this is when Christopher said earlier, this is about the economic emancipation of humanity. That is the most fundamental thing of them all, because everything else, look at Canada, look at Europe, look at Britain. They don't have rights. They have licenses. They have rights so long as the government says they're allowed to have them. And the minute the government doesn't agree with them, they don't have rights. They have licenses. And this is fundamentally what happens when the government can turn off your money, when the government can say what assets you do or do not have. And this is really what America was the foundation for. This is what libertarians, capitalists believe in, exactly as you said, that there should be no intermediary between us and another person that we want to do business with. And howsoever we agree to do business is between us and us alone. Christopher Correct. Puts this really well when he says that the fundamental thing to this is that nobody needs permission to do business. And you touched upon that in terms of regulation. So much of what we see in terms of regulation is actually corporatism. It's about closing trap doors and saying, no, nobody else can come through this door. I listened to one of the so-called blockchains talk about the CEOs of a so-called blockchain talk about their experience at the crypto summit. And everything was about closing that trap door. It was, hey, we've managed to dupe these people into thinking that a proof of stake chain is actually a blockchain. So now we need to close the trap door behind us to make sure no one else comes through and we can monetize the hell out of it. That's what corporatism does. And that's where business and the state get into bed with one another and create this. I think the nicest way of putting it is it's a double-headed monster between the socialist, totalitarian, oppressive state and the corporatist agenda of maximizing wealth. So power and wealth in bed together leads to the rest of us being turned into slaves. And that fundamentally is what, you know, I've been doing this for 24 years. It's cost me everything I have. It's damn near cost me my family. I've done that because I believed that this was so fundamental to our future, and that, you know, I said earlier that when Trump was elected, it was like the light of hope went back on. I don't care if people like or dislike Trump. At the heart of it was that this was a restoration of a government by the people, for the people. We talk about creating an economy by the people, for the people, because everything to date, there's no resource layer. It's all fractured, fragmented. The people who control the access points between those fragments get to monetize that connection, and they make outsized profits for doing it, classic rent seeking. And the minute that their reach exceeds their grasp, which happens every 10 to 20 years, they get to socialize their risk and they print money. And when they print money to pay for these corporatist failures, to pay for socialist government policies, what you end up with is turning everybody else who doesn't have real assets into a pauper. This is real slavery. This is creating dependency, because then it becomes the state where, oh, the only way you can survive is by state handouts. So you're going to keep voting for the people who keep offering the handouts. And so you get into this virtuous, or rather evil, circle of diminution of the human being.
Okay. I would just, Brandon, real quick to clarify for anyone who's listening who doesn't quite get what we mean by resource layer. That's what the Gajimaro is. It's this chain that everybody can use and no one can control. And not a perfect analogy, but a good one that people get is, you can go to Oracle, right? And you can download the entire Oracle database suite and do with it what you want. They want you to, right? Oracle's a company wants you to, because more people that use that software, the more it's accepted, right? But to build anything real on top of that, expertise is not free. The resource layer is free. You can get the tools. If you know what to do with them, go right ahead. But similarly, you could also buy a forest, and if you know how to cut it down, treat the wood, cure the wood, cut the wood, you can build your own house. No one's stopping you. Most people, as per Adam Smith, you know, farm out some of those tasks to others. So by making that resource layer completely free that we do not control once it's launched, right? And we're in whitelist mining now, as Greg said. We'll go to gajumining.com. We'll give you a link after this that anyone can access. And part of it is, we can get to in a second, but because of the way we're, you know, encouraging multiple people to become involved in the mining ecosystem, we're going to be offering a 10% discount to veterans, the veteran community, out of this, for those who want to participate. So we'll include a code for that. But that's one piece of it, is the more people get involved in any portion of this, the mining, building apps, being part of that, truth in trade, formative opinion about the price, right? You can right now You could trade FX through your local bank. You think the euro is going to be relatively stronger? You can start to trade that. Same thing here with the Gajus.
Outstanding. Okay, so gajumining.com is where people can get access. And what sort of, for people who are unfamiliar with crypto mining, what sort of, if anything, what do they need to get started other than an internet connection?
A basic computer. The whole thing about this is that we designed it to work as something you can download from the website, install, activate, step-by-step process. The software itself will put all of the things in place that you need it to do, and then go ahead and start mining. You don't need a supercomputer. Maybe in 50 years' time you might, but right now, this is like being Satoshi's best buddy in 2009 and saying, hey, come on in and do this. The thing for us is this. Yeah, but the thing
for us is this. You can't go back in time, but you can mint this one now.
Right? Yeah. Look, to make this work, 10 million is a base number. It sounds ambitious, but if you think about, we talk to 10 people, 10 people talk to 100 people, 100 people talk to 1,000, and so on, it quickly becomes a viable number. Because the more people understand what we've done and how this is working and that the opportunity is there to get on board with it quickly and easily, the better this can all play through. And ultimately, yeah, we've created Gaju Market as a place you can buy and sell any good or service, legal good or service. It's not intermediated. It is moderated. So no, you can't put Filipino children up for sale in Dubai. But normal everyday things that people do in transacting with one another, you can put on there. So if you want to sell an hour of your gardening time in the local area, put it up on Gaju Market. Earn Gajus that way. So all of the things to facilitate this, we're trying to put in place. But ultimately, 10 million people is the number that begins to turn the dial to say, actually, this is a global economy in emergence. You get to 100 million people and you become a G20 economy. And now for the first time in thousands of years, people can actually have an alternative to a controlled economy. They can open a human economy by the people, for the people, and transact in that.
Yep. I would add to that, as part of that, I get very excited being a monetary history geek. I refer to the Byzant, which was the most stable currency or monetary system in history of the Ottoman Empire. For 500 years to the Mediterranean, during a 500-year period, a Byzant would buy the same amount of wheat in year 1300 as it would in basically 1700. That's kind of incredible, because part of what the fiat currency system has done, when the Federal Reserve says, we're aiming for a 2-3% inflation target, what they're saying is, I'm stealing 3% of your money every year. I am stealing the value of the money you earn so that your dollar buys less. And they tell you out front, right? They're just not even hiding it. We think that we're going to grow the money. That was even before QE2, quantitative easing and all the money they flooded the market with. The fact that the Fed showed up to buy treasury auctions during the crisis when no one else would, meaning we basically paid the left hand with the right hand. It is absolute insanity that they just did this brazenly, because most people pay no attention and don't really understand how money actually works. They just let it go by. But the built into the system is they are telling you, not only am I taxing you directly with income taxes and sales taxes and use taxes and fees, but I am stealing the value of your dollar in the open, and I'm telling you I'm doing it. When you mine Gajus, there's going to be a market price for those, as with anything that is uncontrolled. And it will find a level that makes sense. So there will be predictability for businesses who want to transact in Gajus, for people who want to transact in Gajus, for those who are mining Gajus, knowing what they're getting into. And we're creating a true system that, done correctly, has no one putting their finger on it and saying we're stealing percentage of it by inflation every year. It's purely done by the market. And we're aiming for, we kind of joke, but we're not, the intergalactic Byzant for the next 5,000 years. We do this right. It is a non-debasable currency that is freely operated, that no one can control. That alone will drive some governments crazy, but that's okay, because freedom tends to win out over time.
Yeah, and something to add into this is the reason why it's called the Gajimaru. The Gajimaru is a tree that goes in southern Japan in particular, and it has a common root, but it ends up looking like a complete forest. So the idea we had was we were trying to think of an analogy in the real world that people could look at and understand the idea that we were trying to put forward. So that common root is the resource layer, Groot. It is the base piece of the Gajimaru, the proof of work core. On top of that, we put all the tool sets that allow people to build their own infrastructure, like the trunks that make up the forest, that looks like a forest, but it's actually one organism. The idea there is that, let's say, for example, the US government wants to create a stable coin, reference coin, CBDC, wants to create anything it wants. That's all infrastructure. The moment that somebody dictates rules and controls it and says what can come in and what cannot, it's infrastructure. It's not a resource layer. That's why everything in the world today is infrastructure, not a resource layer, because there's always a control. In this context, there is no control, but there is an understanding that different countries will want to do things slightly differently. You can still get massive efficiencies out of that, but you're now actually giving people a choice. And the interesting thing about giving people a choice is all of a sudden you're going to have a real comparison. So why haven't people really understood the diminution of their value as their life value? Their life value is time, it's money, it's how much work they can do. And everybody who's only got time to offer to the market has had their lives massively devalued by money printing. The people who owned real assets, they didn't, because the real assets rose in price, which is why our children's generation cannot afford to buy a home. Okay, so we are becoming aware of it through a sort of a creeping sense of this is what's happening. And one of the reasons why we really wanted to see MAGA MAHA win was actually the people who were pushing that agenda were people who had figured this out, that something somewhere is off. You know, like there's a smell of rotten fish somewhere. I don't quite know where it's coming from, but I know it's there. So I'm going to vote for the guy that wants to expose the rotten fish and get rid of it. So when you don't have a reference point, it's really easy to contort something. So I used to play this joke with people. I'd say, how fast are you moving while they're sitting still? And they'd look at me like I'm an idiot and say, well, I'm sitting still. And you say, no, you're not. You're doing 28,000 kilometers an hour around the sun. Yeah. It's perspective, right? But if you don't have a real money that really works, like the Gaju, as a reference point, you never have the ability to see that actually the dollar is being printed into masses. I mean, I think it was $480 billion in M0 circulation when I was a trader. It's now $5.7 trillion. So it's like a 12x number of dollars been created in 25 years.
Chasing the same amount of stuff.
Yeah, and which is why you have this bubble of everything. But the interesting thing is, while on the one hand we're saying, hey, we're grown-ups, we're all over 40 in the team, we understand that governments are going to want to do things the way they're going to do them. And what we want to see is an interoperable open base that everything can be communicated within, and they can choose their interconnectivity. The distinction between interoperability and interconnectivity is everything is interoperable by design, but you can choose what connections you permit within the infrastructure layer, okay?
That's actual freedom.
if we can create that comparison, people can actually see, oh no, hold on, I can buy that with one Gaju, but it's now gonna cost me $2. Last year, that was $1.50. What happened? And literally the penny drops for everybody. And at that point, you start to see accountability into the entire system, because everybody whose lives have been devalued, their time has been devalued by the diminution of monetary value, they're the ones who are going to be voting to say, no, we want fiscal probity.
Interesting. Gajumining.com. So people using it can go to the website, they can start mining now, download the software on their computer. Is there anything else people need to know before going into this, Christopher?
No, I mean, we'll put the link up directly, so that'll give them the benefit of finding the discount as well. And there's a lot of material to read and a lot to go into. The team has you know, striven really hard to make something that is fundamentally complex to build easy to operate. But that's one of the biggest things that really matters, is that, you know, you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to really know much of anything beyond know how to use a computer on any platform, Linux, Windows, Mac. They're all downloadable installation kits for that, and you can get going. Obviously, for people who want to do really, really huge size things, we could talk about that, right? That's fine. But there are base packages on the website to pick from, starting as low as 500 Swiss francs, right? So you can. We want this to be something that is accessible pretty much for anybody. You can spend millions on this, great. Some of us are, but you could also get in early and start smaller increments, because participation in a network economy is kind of as important as the actual numbers of people doing or the magnitude any individual miner is doing. Right now in BTC, something like 3 or 4 investor groups control like 85% of the mining. And the numbers might be off, but it's kind of like it's scale.
Five accounts do 95% of the mining.
But the whole point of, and for those folks who don't fully hear about it, they hear blockchain, one of the major uses that we've come across when talking to corporations about those who are going to use systems is, and there's kind of a confluence of cybersecurity with this, meaning that the by now sad joke is there are two types of companies in the world, those who have been hacked and those who don't know they've been hacked yet, right? But they have been hacked, they just don't know it. Data from IBM and others shows that the time from a penetrating hacker gets onto a corporate system to the time that resident hacker sitting on your system is discovered by the company, the victim, is like 210 days. A lot of havoc can be wreaked in that period of time. And one of the biggest things that you really realize is if the enemy's inside the gates, then I have to assume they're looking at all my files, in which case I have to encrypt them all. So now I have to encrypt all the files on my network because I assume that my enemy is looking at my network. But when it comes to a database, and we use this example all the time because it's both monetary and safety. If you're, say, buying, expensive replacement parts for an aircraft, right? And you go on to buy, you own your own De Havilland Beaver because you want to be a cool kid and you made a lot of money and you like to hang out with Harrison Ford, right? So you buy one of the remaining 195 of them left in the world. And when you need to fix something in that engine, there's a $30,000 titanium crankshaft that you need to buy, right, to fix your engine. If there's one single database that controls all the availability in the world, well, you can bribe someone to get into that database and replace your $85 aluminum painted chrome part that was forged yesterday in China somewhere and sell them that part and make a huge amount of money. Well, that's bad enough because it's fraud, but also that part might blow apart midair and you're all going to die. So there are real world consequences to changing data points in a single database. A distributed ledger where hundreds of thousands or millions of people have to mine the decision to put that entry into a database is unhackable. You cannot replace that $30,000 titanium part with an $85 knockoff because you're not going to meet all these anonymous people and bribe them to do that. So it's concrete value to make sure that much like lots of people deciding something is better than one, similarly, there are real, real, real uses for a distributed ledger economy that validates transactions to the world and makes everything safer and more secure.
It's just like anything. A single point of failure is not a good thing. Doesn't matter what it is. In your business, if you're that guy at work that knows how to do everything and no one else knows how to do it, well, you can't go on vacation because now you're too indispensable, right? So single points of failure are never good. But this has been incredibly insightful to learn about this. And I think that this is really just a continuation of this sort of global populist idea that's been flourishing over the last couple of years just because of how forgotten, especially the working class on this planet, has become. Yep. And this is a way to fight back, is sort of the way I view this, and a way to protect yourself more than anything and protect your posterity, your family, right? Anything, any sort of wealth you want to hold. You mentioned real estate earlier, Greg. Owning a home is one of the greatest forms of passed downable generational wealth that the middle class has, and a way to store wealth. And that's under attack as well here in the United States. you could have a whole conversation about that. But, you know, just the protection of your data, your wealth, your family's generational wealth, all these things, if existing in a non-single point of failure network, like you said, and a way to deregulate, decentralize, and just you and me doing business as we see the ability to do business right is the greatest, like I said, inoculation to tyrannical government that you can find. So I really appreciate both your times. You guys are both incredibly smart. I'm a little underwater on a lot of the things you're talking about because I'm not this financial mind like you guys are, for sure. But I understand the need for the everyday person to have a way to protect themselves and have a way to, you know, contain all of your information in a way that is safe, right? So I appreciate you guys coming on and talking to me about this. And all of the link, the code, like you said, I'll put in the description for the episode. Awesome. And then, of course, Christopher, I'll get you all the stuff you need to cross post to Messy Times and all that so that we can just post it everywhere. But thank you guys both. If you guys have any closing remarks, I would like to just open the floor up to you guys, and then if not, then we can wrap up. And
I would just say thanks again for having us on, and you're too kind, but in essence you grasped it right. There are a lot of technical details here, Lord Rothschild once said beautifully that there were six people on the planet that truly understand the nature of money, and none of them had very much of it. So it's a long, deep rabbit hole of knowledge. But what's important is you grasp it instantly, right? Is that we're providing a non-debasable form of money that anyone can access and no government can control. And that's the value here, right? There are, you know, layers of technical depth, sure. But, you know, the important part is that everyone gets this mission. It's right in line with the very same things that drive the people crazy, and that, you know, the MAGA movement, whatever you want to call it, is driven by, and why the elitist political class is losing their minds and paying people to protest in the streets about what? Cutting government waste? I mean, it's the fact that they're paying people to go. They don't even know they're protesting. Elon Musk is finding that the government has wasted your money, and then someone gives you $20 to wave a sign and you go, Elon sucks. Why? They can't tell you why he sucks. But it's because the political class, the swamp creatures, are losing their minds that things like the Gaju exist. Greg?
Absolutely.
I think you would have seen a CBDC if Kamala Harris had been voted in, and it would look totally just like the one in the EU-SSR. Other people call that the EU. I think the EU-SSR is a much more accurate epithet. In fact, that's how this whole thing started. There was a guy in a WhatsApp channel with me who described the EU as the EU-SSR, and I texted him and said, we are going to be friends. Who are you? And that was how the team began to come together to build this. But putting that to one side, I think you are going to see some sort of version of a CBDC or a corporatist version potentially as a stable coin. Stable coins, we have a really good video on. Maybe it's a bit technical, but it's in Rumble and it tears them to pieces.
Love Rumble.
Many reasons why it should be torn to pieces. Yeah, actually YouTube sent us a Craig, one of the co-founder teams, guys on the team. He said, he talked about forcing vaccinations in one half of a sentence in a 3-hour podcast. And for that, we were sent YouTube sent us an offer where we could, it actually was a re-education camp, I believe, in the email. I think you got one as well, Christopher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is this the online class to
teach
you why you're naughty boy? I had that too. Yeah. For COVID.
Yeah. So it basically gave us a choice. You can be on the naughty step forever, or you can come to re-education class, and then you're only on the naughty step for 90 days. So at that point, we decided that, the search engine stuff can be on YouTube. The real stuff will be on Rumble. But I digress. The thing is, all of the forces that would find new and unique ways to subjugate the average working person, that is the object here. That is the whole game. And that is what we're really fighting against. That's why, for us, it was important that we took the hardest road to do this and took the fewest shortcuts. In fact, we took none. We didn't write bullshit white papers. We didn't do pump and dump schemes. We didn't do any of the go and talk to VCs in California and get them to write $100 million checks at billion-dollar valuations because you've shown them how you can create the ultimate pass go pay me $200 trap in your system. We did none of those things. Yep. What I would like to make clear, though, is the website is still being built out. All of the functionality is being put into the back end. By the end of next week, we will have the ability for people to buy with crypto or buy with credit cards and debit cards. We're just putting those things in place because it's been made very hard to do anything in this sphere. Yeah. Christopher and I had a small clash a few months back where he said, have you heard about these payments, guys? And I said, are they using grids? The secure enclave piece that I was talking about earlier, he mm-hmm. said, well, no, of course they're not. They're not on the Gajimara. I said, right, so they're not competition. Right. But this is where they can catch you, because the second that we had the first two transactions go through with Stripe, it was like, oh, okay, we're going to close you down. So we had Stripe to rebuild the whole thing. And there are some good people working with us to do that, but I want to be very plain with the people watching. We're going to have automated processes to be able to use cards, use crypto by next Friday. That's the, I think it's the 18th of, sorry, the next one on is the 25th of April. Everything will be up, running, and exactly as it should be with downloadable links, all of it.
Outstanding.
So the discount code that Christopher has is good until the end of this month to get everybody on board.
Great. Yeah. Well, Greg, thank you so much. I actually would love to have you on again at some point to just completely talk about this and how's you develop and how's this gone down the path of where you're going. I think it would be awesome to have you on again to talk about that. Thank you both. Yeah, that's outstanding. I love Switzerland. Lucerne is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So I would love to go back one day. So you're pretty lucky, I think, living in a cool place like that.
I'm not so far from it. I'm actually... No? I'm literally at the end of the line. Someone disparagingly pointed out to me one day, you know where you live is literally the end of the line. I said, bravo, you figured it out.
Thank
you.
That's funny.
The farmers here stopped the Holy Roman Empire when they were like the USA plus Germany plus Britain. 1290 something? The local farmers stopped the biggest empire army of the time at the valley just up the road from where I live. So I figure that if the world is going to burn, I'm in a good place to have a... Yeah. I do think, as you've both pointed out, there are a range of forces at play to try and return us to our state of subjugation. My eldest daughter talks about this. She says, Dad, can you prove that we're not in the Matrix? And I said, it's kind of hard. I can see why you'd say that, but... Her whole generation, we've stripped away their hope, and we have to give it back to them. Our duty is to do that, and our duty is to give them the tools to remain free.
Amen. Outstanding. I'm all about that. Well, thank you guys both for coming on and talking
to
me.
Thank you, Brandon.
We'll get this out. Chris, I'll talk to you offline a little bit more, but... thank you everybody for listening. Check the description for the information we talked about here in the podcast, and you both have outstanding days, evenings for you, Chris or Greg. So yeah, absolutely.
God bless everybody. Take care.
Talk soon. Thanks.